Thanks for downloading this podcast. It's for personal use only and must not be rebroadcast, reproduced, or used in any form without permission.
Tell your friends they can get their own copy by searching iTunes for Radio Le Mans or visiting radiolemans.com.
Live from Trackside, this is IMSA Radio.
Hello everybody and welcome along to Motul Petit Le Mans and our Thursday bonus coverage for you starts with free practice 2 for the IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship. We've got FP3 coming and we've also got, unusually, but I'm delighted to say, we'll be able to bring you some live coverage of the Michelin Pilot Challenge qualifying session as well here on RS2. IMSA Radio. I'm John Hindorf. I'm in the Haggerty Global Broadcast Centre and we're about to go live with action on track from Michelin Raceway Road Atlanta.
The WeatherTech Sports Car Championship on IMSA Radio.
Jeremy Shaw is alongside me, John Hindorf, in the Haggerty Global Broadcast Centre. Let's say good evening first of all, or good afternoon first of all, to Shay Adam, our VP Racing Fuel Pit and Paddock reporter. Hello.
Hello.
Excellent.
How are you?
Excellent. I'm very well. Very well indeed. Bring us up to date with what we need to know about the entry list for IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship, because there's been a few bits and pieces of changes.
We've got some interesting additions to this year's Petit Le Mans, Motul Petit Le Mans. As normal, we've got three drivers in every car because it is an endurance race, and that is a part of the rules. But some different third drivers than perhaps we were expecting. Going from last to first in terms of the entry list, let's start with Balzon. We welcome back Alessandro Balzon in the 63 Scuderia Corsa WeatherTech Ferrari. Now, this is a big deal because Tony Vallander has been Cooper McNeil's co-driver all year long. Balzon is going to be filling in for Vallander, the team citing COVID-related issues, with Tony getting back and forth between the U.S. He's still listening. He's still a part of the team. But it does mean that the meatball is back behind the wheel for the rest of the year. And I, for one, am really excited to see Alessandro back at that team. We've also got Hardpoint running in an endurance race. Now, this Audi does not typically take part in the endurance races. This tends to be a sprint race special only. Rob Ferriel, driving with Spencer Pompelli all year, can't drive with Spencer Pompelli at this race because he is the third driver with Magnus Racing in their Lamborghini. So they've drafted in some experts to come and help out. You've got silver and local driver Andrew Davis, winner of the Michelin Pilot Challenge race at Road Atlanta just over a month ago, and some guy named Marcus Finkelhock, who's a fairly handy Formula One X factory Audi driver. He's good enough, but he's never raced Petit Le Mans before, so this is going to be an interesting weekend for him. At the Lexus camp, now this is an interesting turn of events because we've had different drivers. This is the third driver for the 14 Lexus. Aaron Tielitz has been the guy who's been jumping into the 12 for the endurance races. Well, Aaron is in the 14 once again this weekend, the car with whom he shares with Jack Hawksworth. That is his championship season-long car. But he is 2 points ahead of Hawksworth, so if they stay together for the remainder of the year, it means that Tielitz could potentially win the championship over Hawksworth. They're joined this weekend by Michael De Quesada. In the other Lexus, it's somebody that I know Jeremy is very proud of, young Kyle Kirkwood, making his WeatherTech debut with the Lexus team. He's going to be a fun one to watch alongside Townsend Bell and Frank Montecalvo. And as far as GTD is concerned, we welcome back Pfaff. The Canadians came back from north of the border. Very strong run for them at Petit Le Mans last year, where they were third in the race. They didn't have a great start at Daytona. They actually had a mechanical issue, but they were very strong. Zachary Robichon getting pole position. This is going to be a good weekend for Pfaff.
Wherever you are in the world, give us a shout at IMSA Radio on Twitter. Jeremy Shaw, welcome to the broadcast. And we welcome back as well the prototypes here. Very good indeed to see the big cars back. And it seems like only yesterday that we were running the 6 hours here.
does, doesn't it? And yeah, this is a very weird year all the way around, and a very bizarre season in the IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship. I mean, generally, yeah, this is we're here at, well, here figuratively or literally at Michelin Raceway Road Atlanta on the right weekend of the year for the 23rd edition of Petit Le Mans. But instead of being the last round of the championship, like it should be, we've still got two more to go after here. So yeah, that's kind of weird. But look, a good field of cars, the regular eight prototypes, with some shuffling in drivers there as well, which is some of them rather interesting. Most particularly, I think, the lack of Joao Barbosa for the first time in a long, long time. So we're certainly going to miss Joao. Great personality, super driver, but he's not had the greatest of years, I don't think. And alongside Sebastian Bourdais this weekend, and I believe for the rest of the season in number five car, is going to be Tristan Vautier, and back again as he was at the Rolex 24, Loic Duval. So the all-French car number five. I guess we should call it car sunk, should we? But hopefully it won't be won't be wet this weekend. And good to see four P2 cars as well, John, isn't it? Including a brand new entry here from the Polish team into Europol competition, doing a deal with the PR1 Matheson Motorsports car to run a second machine here in the P2 ranks.
And as far as drivers and teams are concerned, Shaheen, Jeremy's mentioned the major... Well, actually, one thing he didn't mention was the addition to the championship-leading Wayne Taylor Racing prototype squad.
That would be a 1S Dixon, a championship-leading in IndyCar and all-around great Kiwi Scott Dixon. So that's a pretty good addition. But you've also got Pagenaud joining in the number 6 Penske Team Acura, Alex Rossi in the number 7, the team car. We've got Philippe Albuquerque, who just can't stop winning this year. That guy literally seems to win every race that he enters.
And just, so being, and just being crowned champion in ELMS, of course, with Phil Hansen with a round to go at Portugal, if that happens.
We've also got Ryan Hunter-Reay in the 55 Mazda, Olivier Plaw in the 77 Mazda, and then a lineup of Chris Miller, Matthias Leist, and Gabby Opry for the 85 JDC Miller Motorsport. But Jeremy mentioned the LMP2 category, and that really is where we get some pretty good names coming into play. Austin McCusker, former series champion of the LMP3 ranks, joins Rob Hodes and Jacob Schmembecki for inter-Europol competition. They are running under the PR1 banner, along with Patrick Heller, Simon Tremmer, and Scott Huffaker, who won the six-hour race just a month ago. Performance Tech with a completely new lineup of Jim McGuire, the guy we always associate with those aero paint schemes, Matt Bell, British Matt Bell, yep, and Colin Brown. That's going to be a handy car. But then, of course, you've got Mikkel Jensen making his Petit Le Mans debut, Jupp van Ulrich making his Petit Le Mans debut, and John Ferrano, a Canadian who's always fast for Starworks. So it's going to be a stacked class.
Jupp van Ulrich, a very, very rapid Dutchman indeed, and another one supported by the Jumbo supermarket chain in which is Fritaert, of course, who races in Europe. He's helped a number of young Netherlands-based drivers in the past, and Jupp van Ulrich is very quick indeed. Lovely late afternoon here in Atlanta at just before 4 o'clock in the afternoon, with the temperature in the air at 23 Celsius, on the track at 33, shaking to the conversion.
91.
Say again?
91 for the track, 73 for the air.
Ah, thank you very much. So, Jeremy, who's apart from everybody at the track where it's very pleasant this afternoon, late afternoon, and 79% humidity. It's one of those Atlanta afternoons, a little bit of overcast as well at the moment. Who is on form at the moment? As far as the prototypes are concerned, you should look really no further from the Penske Acura.
Yeah, no question about it. I mean, that car has been, after a dismal start to the season for Elio Castroneves and Ricky Taylor, who finished 8th and 7th out of 8 cars in the first 3 races of the season, just been on a tear now, and won you just can't stop winning, it seems like. They're going to be really hard to beat, I think, in the championship now, with having won the last three races in a row. And, you know, not only that, but the last time any team or manufacturer won three races in a row was way back in 2017, when the Wayne Taylor Racing Cadillac team won the first five races in a row to start off that season. So it's been a while, and a remarkable run for that pairing in the car number seven, which was joined this weekend by Alexander Rossi as well. And that car, I think, was quickest in the practice session this morning as well. At 1 minute 10.086.
The situation in GT Le Mans, well, everybody's chasing Corvette, let's be honest. Porsche have been good here, and they've not yet got a decent result this year. And I know they want it. We had John Bennett on Midweek Motorsport on Wednesday, just talking to him about coming back into GT3, but also, of course, Core Autosport running the Porsche North America GT team. And they would love a couple of wins before the end of what's been a difficult season, Jeremy, as they've been defending their championship.
Yeah. Sorry, what was that? The core team?
Yes, indeed. Yeah.
Yeah, beg your pardon. They've had a dismal time. I mean, you talk about a bad start to the season for Acura team Penske. Well, at least it got better for them. It hasn't got better for the Porsche GT team, because they're just digging a deeper and deeper hole. And I think there's some big brass here from Germany this weekend, so they're going to be keeping an eye on things. I mean, last weekend at Charlotte was definitely the hope of the season. It couldn't get much worse than that. Both cars out before 15 minutes even were on the clock. I mean, just a diabolical showing at Charlotte, where, you know, the cars were favoured to have a really, really strong evening, and they didn't. So, you know, they really do have to turn around. Of course, the good news is, if there is any good news, they've had a lot of success here at Michelin Race Raid Road Atlanta in the past, as the Porsche team, including, of course, winning overall in 2015 in that horrendously wet year. So they certainly hope to turn things around here this weekend. They're a distant third in the championship points for manufacturers, teams and drivers.
It's Jeremy Shaw, who joins me, John Hindorf, in the Hagerty Global Broadcast Centre this afternoon, as we're in free practice two. We'll have free practice three for you as well from WeatherTech Sports Car Championship. Just over an hour and 8 minutes still remaining, and we will have the Michelin Pilot Challenge qualifying as well for you here on RS2 tomorrow, Friday. Huge day of action. The majority of it, in fact, I think all of it, is in sound and vision. So wherever you are in the world, we've got a couple of Porsche races. We've got a Prototype Challenge race, and it's one of the longer races for Prototype Challenge this year. And we, of course, have got the WeatherTech Sports Car Championship qualifying session as well. And they're all in sound and vision for you. Saturday, it's the third of the Porsche races, and then the whole of Motul Petit Le Mans. And again, if you are outside the US, you can watch uninterrupted coverage with IMSA Radio speaking bits. Commentary was the word I was looking for. Oh God, it's going to be one of those weekends. And if you're in the US, NBC Network, as well as NBCSN, the guys up in Charlotte, making sure that you get to see and hear the best of it if you're in the US. But if you're outside the US, of course, the international TV feed. Jeremy, what sort of time should we be looking for? We've had one free practice session. There was a promoter test session, which was not mandatory on Wednesday, but a few of the teams went out. But what sort of times do you think we should be looking at? It's pretty decent track conditions here.
Yeah, and supposed to be getting better, I think, over the weekend, if such is possible. I mean, yeah, bright sunshine right now. I think Shay said temperatures, low 70s, I think she said. I gather it's supposed to get cooler as the week goes along, and I think the temperature on race day, I believe, is down in the lower 60s. So I'm not sure whether that's the low for the race or what, but certainly getting cooler through the weekend. But perfect conditions right now. You're right. But this morning's fastest time, a 1:10.086, set by Ricky Taylor. The qualifying lap record is a 1:08.457. so a long, long way away from that. The race lap record set last year, also set last year by the same guy, Felipe Nasr, at a 108.869. So we're a second and a bit away from those times in the first session earlier on. Of course, we haven't yet seen in this session the DPI cars, because the first 15 minutes is set aside for the silver and bronze rated drivers in the two Pro-Am classes. That's LMP2 and GT.
Yeah, this is the split session, of course. Shea, you were keeping an eye on what was going on in FP1 this morning at Michelin Raceway Road Atlanta. What can you, as our VP Racing Fuel Pit and Paddock reporter, tell us about what went on?
I talked to a few people this morning who all said that the S9 tire in GTD was a little bit difficult to switch on because the temperatures were so cold, which actually made it a very valuable session because the temperatures were much more reminiscent of what we are going to see on Saturday. Now, the high for the race, as Jeremy mentioned, in the mid-60s, it's only 66 degrees Fahrenheit. That's going to be closer to the race start. The race finish is going to be in the 40s. They're predicting a low of 42 on Saturday night. So get your puffy jackets out if you're out or on the track, because you might just need that campfire. But hey now, but it was interesting because it meant that this morning they were able to do more work on the car for the end of the race, whereas normally with the first practice session, you're just going out there and trying to get a handle on things. Because we just had the 6-hour race, 5 weeks ago, everybody's already got a good handle on their car, everyone except for Pfaff, of course, who weren't in that race. But it means that people were able to jump into it a little bit quicker than they would have. And we were seeing different sort of lap times coming out from a first practice session than we normally would.
If you at Michelin Raceway Road Atlanta, thank you very much indeed for supporting the IMSA series this weekend and this Motul Petit Le Mans. Thanks very much to everybody at the track for all of their hard work, not just on this race but also on the 6-hour race what a month ago. And a particular thank you, as I can see by the way there's quite a lot of you parked up down the S's in your RVs, and keep yourself warm, says Shear. It was 10 degrees Celsius colder where I am today, and raining, and I still went out with the roof on the car down. So, you know, that's, you know, German engineering and heated seats for you, as far as I can see. Thanks very much to the dedication of everybody at the track for getting us on the PA and on the FM link as well. Dave, as ever, you've done a smashing job, mate. Thank you very much. Sorry I can't be there to bump elbows or whatever we're allowed to do nowadays, but thank you very much for all your hard work, Dave Miller, and the rest of the team there on PA at Michelin Raceway Road Atlanta. I don't know if Ed Conway's there at the moment. Ed, if you are, best wishes. Keep yourself safe, won't you, sir? We hope to see you soon. Missing seeing all of our friends, obviously, at the circuit at the moment. It's Patrick Kelly, unsurprisingly, Jeremy, who's quick at the moment because he's been quick every time he's been in that PR1 Matheson Motorsport LMP2 car.
He certainly has. Yes, you're right. He's made four starts in the IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship. Three times he's qualified the car. Three times he's put it on pole position. So we'll be looking to keep that streak alive here this week as well. And he's been absolutely superb, really, really impressive. Simon Trummer from Switzerland, the sort of most experienced driver in the field in that car again this weekend, alongside the youngster Scott Huffaker, just 20 years of age, from Menlo Park in California. Really exciting young talent. Hasn't done an awful lot of racing really, he's been quick in anything he's ever driven. He set the time this morning. That was actually second fastest in the LMP2 class, but only 3 or 4 tenths away from the quickest time, which was set by the Danish driver, Mikkel Jens, in the Tower Motorsport by Starbucks car number 8.
So live at Road Atlanta and around the world on RS2, IMSA Radio. We'll have SiriusXM for the race on Saturday. Remember, if you are further afield than at the track. It is a Saturday race and a bit late to start as well for those of you listening in Europe. It is 12:40 green flag Atlanta time. That's Eastern time in the States. So that's going to push it a little bit earlier into Sunday morning. But good news is it is Sunday morning, so it's not a work day. And it just means you can stay up and watch the Bathurst 1000 as well, which will be about two hours in by that. But I've already put it on the DVR just in case I can't make it to the end after our race on Saturday evening. GTD at the moment, it's Turner Motorsport. What a few weeks there have had. Dylan McAvan behind the wheel of the BMW M6 GT3, the number 96 car ahead of Scuderia Corsa. Welcome back Cooper McNeil in GT Daytona with the Ferrari 488 GT3. He's not had the best of luck here when he has made the decision to miss IMSA weekends and to try and consolidate his championship charge in Ferrari Challenge.
Well, he did come home with the third consecutive Ferrari Challenge North America Trofeo Pirelli Championship. So congratulations to Cooper for that. But you're right, John. Every time that he elected, which was twice this year, to forego the IMSA weekend for the Ferrari Challenge weekend, which, by the way, is an IMSA sanctioned series. So technically they were both IMSA weekends.
Good point.
He didn't win the race that took place on the same day as the WeatherTech race. So he managed to win all but two races this year in Ferrari Challenge. He did take every possible pole position, but the two races where he had misfortune were the two races where he should have been racing at Mid-Ohio. Yes. And at Charlotte. Oopsie.
Yeah, so actually it wouldn't have made any difference, frankly. He could have come down, could have come down for his points haul. Just a quick note as well. Now, have we just had the green flag? No, not quite yet. For the rest of the field, that first 15 minutes down, as Jeremy said, to the less experienced drivers in the categories allowed out, LMP2 and GT3. In fact, we've just had the green flag for GT Le Mans and DPI. And Jordan Taylor has gone out for Corvette in the 3. Tom Milner in the number 4. Tristan Fortier has gone out in the Mustang sampling Cadillac. So they are going to be moving between these. So this is the all skate bit in the middle of the field. Coming up a wee bit later on, Michelin Pilot Challenge qualifying, with included in that, of course, the GT4 Camaro, which has just been confirmed, as we were talking about the Australian supercars, the GT4 versions of the Mustang and the Camaro being confirmed as the next Gen 3, as they call them, Aussie supercars, which also, of course, leaves it open to a few more GT4 cars as well. And already had a word with a couple of manufacturer representatives who say they are interested. They will be modified. They won't run in standard GT4's trim, but that's another place that we'll see some GT cars effectively running as Aussie touring cars from that's next season, isn't it, in Australia. So that's all very exciting. Their final round this weekend, as we mentioned. Straight to the top for Ryan Briscoe, Jeremy, in the Konica Minolta Cadillac with, as we said, Scott Dixon added to that car this weekend.
Yeah, and that is the car that leads the championship coming into this weekend.
Of course, just
10 car. Yeah, just indeed. I mean, it's ridiculously tight. The top six cars separated by 13 points, and the top five by just 9. So, you know, it really is tight at the front of the field there. And I think, you know, just expecting, it's been a tremendous championship so far. Yeah, there's only 8 cars. We'd like to see a few more, no question about that. But it only takes 2 cars to make a race, and we've got 8 now that are incredibly closely matched, it seems to me. I mean, I don't really hear any bleating at all from any of the teams. One or two perennials who can't stop themselves.
Yes, exactly.
Basically, you know, no one is saying, well, you know, that car is streets faster, like they have been saying for the last, you know, since the BOP was first brought in, I think. So, you know, I think that's an indicator that the IMSA technical team has done a fantastic job. And, you know, it's going to be tough to pick a potential winner here. Last month, all three cars were in contention going into the last hour or so of the race. The Mazda, one of the Mazdas had a brake problem. What happened to the Cadillacs? The Cadillacs had a problem as well. I can't remember now. Too much has happened since then. But certainly they're all in contention. The Cadillac won here last year. And, you know, I think anything can happen. It's going to be awfully hard to pick a winner, probably in any of the categories, actually, but particularly DPI.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree with that at all. That was Jeremy Shaw. He's with me, John Hindhoff, in the Hagerty Global Broadcast Centre. Share Adam is our VP Racing Fuel Pit and Paddock reporter. We've had 5 minutes of the all-skate middle portion of the section. We'll have 15 minutes at the end, which is just for the pro classes, the DPI and the GT Le Mans. At the moment, it is an Acura of Dane Cameron, the number six car for Team Penske, with an 11.307, 1 minute 11.307. That is the fastest time at the moment. I need to make that a bit smaller on my screen, otherwise I'll never be able to see everything and all the bits and pieces that I need to. There we go, that's better. Unfortunately, my old eyes can just about still see that. If you are with us for the whole weekend, reminder that over on radio-show.co.uk on the IMSA live page, we've got our enhanced timing service for you as well, so you can look at some of the strategy software as well. New fastest time for Dane Cameron this time around. This is interesting, a 109.888, Jeremy. This is getting down to business pretty quickly for Dane Cameron.
Yeah, we talked about the number seven car having had a dismal start to the season, while number six car has had a pretty grim time all the way through the championship. Unbelievably, for last year's series champions, number six pairing of Dane Cameron and Juan Pablo Montoya haven't even had a podium finish this season. They've been quick just about everywhere, but just absolutely nothing has gone their way. They made a few mistakes, viz. Montoya slamming into the back of somebody. Who was it now? At the race last month, coming into the pit lane, for goodness sake.
That was the tank car.
Disaster. It was a tank car, yeah. Thank you very much. I'm sure it was a tank car. But, you know, it's one a catalogue of disasters this season. But, yeah, we know how talented that pairing is. So good to see Dane Cameron up at the front here again in the early part of this session.
Just give you a rundown in a wee second of what's going on in the other classes. GT Daytona, still Turner Motorsport. The 96 car, that is Dylan McAvan who put that time in. Paul Miller Racing and Madison Snow in second place for the Lamborghini Huracan, the number 48. Shinji Mishimi, welcome back to Shinji. Shinya for the MSR Racing with Kerb Agajuni and Acura, that's the 86 car. Then Jeff Westfall for Ferrari and the WeatherTech number 63. Michael De Casada in Vassar Sullivan next up. And separated, Jeremy, at the top of GTD by absolutely nothing at all. BMW, Lamborghini, Acura, Ferrari, Lexus, your top five.
Yeah, get used to that. That's the norm, isn't it? We've become so excited about GTD. You know, we talked about how competitive it is in DPI. Well, GTLM's the same, of course, with nothing to choose really between the Porsches, the BMWs and the Corvettes. It's just a question of who gets it wrong to take themselves out of contention for a winner. And it's the same in GTD as well. You know, we've had a great manufacturer battle there all the way through the season with most of the manufacturers kind of represented on the podium at one stage or another. So, you know, we've only had three different winners. The Lexus has certainly been the strongest team this season. They've won five of the six races that make up the regular season championship. I say that because one of the races was just for the Sprint Cup. But even, you know, coming into this weekend, certainly because of that, Lexus has a pretty handy lead in the Manufacturers' Championship for the overall WeatherTech Sports Sprint. Excuse me. Let me start again. Super competitive in the regular season championship. Just 3 points in between Lexus and Acura. The Sprint Cup championship, however, that's been very much dominated by Lexus. They've wrapped that up effectively last time out at Charlotte. But look, there's still just 3 points between the top two. Porsche is only another half dozen points back as well in the battle for the Manufacturers' Championship in GTD. So, you know, it's tight as ever.
Which is the way we like it. Let's be absolutely honest about this. You're not going to hear any complaints from Jeremy Shea or I about what is going on in the championship. And I know, you know, we've suggested, haven't we, that B, O and P might be, if not dirty words, then dirty initials. But once again, the IMSA technical department have done a cracking job collecting, I don't know what the biggest terabyte, gigabyte, zigabyte, zigabyte is, but they have collected an awful lot of data and they've put it to good use. And it does seem as though the playing field is pretty level, that, as Jeremy said earlier on, there have been there's only two ways to judge things. Either nobody's complaining or everybody's complaining. If it's at either end of that spectrum, then you're doing your job right, I guess, is the guys at technical. And it's been most of the former and hardly any of the latter, and certainly nothing in the middle. So it's been a very good year in what has been, let us not forget, a difficult year for everybody in terms of getting things going. And I do think we should be, said this on all of the races we've talked about this year, IMSA and other championships as well, let's celebrate the fact that we have cars on track and that we are enjoying 31 entries. Now, would we like a few more entries at Motul Petit Le Mans for one of the Blue Ribbon races of the year? Of course we would. But not very long ago, there was quite a few people who would have laughed at you if you said that we'd even be having this race. So let's celebrate what we've got and count ourselves lucky to have seen some cracking entertainment this weekend. And by the way, if you didn't see the Charlotte Roval last weekend, Charlotte Roval plus sports cars, add water, just 100% entertainment. I was absolutely blown away by that, Jeremy. And I've been talking about it all week, actually, with people in various parts of the world. I'm not sure what I expected, but certainly I was entertained. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah. Well, we always are, though, aren't
That's
we?
That's fair point, you know, Jeremy.
But those conditions last week, I mean, they were really, really tricky. But it was a great event, I thought. Absolutely loved it.
Yeah, absolutely agree. So what have we got there? 48 minutes to go. Philippe Albuquerque has climbed into the Whelan Engineering Cadillac. It's the number 31 car, red and white Cadillac, that he shares with Pipo Durrani and Felipe Nasr. So all Portuguese speaking crew. Felipe Albuquerque from Portugal, just confirmed, as mentioned earlier, as the ELMS champion with United Autosports, with Phil Hansen. United Autosports with a couple of LMP3 cars that they want to bring to Daytona and the Rolex 24 next year, as yet for unnamed drivers. But very excited about that. And they've just received their GT4 McLarens in very much McLaren orange. And they will be testing shortly in the UK. And with a bit of luck, might be able to bring you a report from that in a week or so's time. So United certainly looking to expand what they're doing both in the UK, Europe and further afield, and we wish them well in that endeavour and hope to see them at the Rolex in January. In GT Le Mans, Conor De Filippi ahead of the pack in the M8 GTE for BMW Team RLL. Mentioned this at Charlotte, but the R of RLL, Bobby Rahal, recovering from a bit of back surgery. Described, I thought, very adequately by Graham, his son, as just your typical tall former racing driver's back surgery. And having worked with Ray Malik, who's another man well over 6 feet, and also my father, who wasn't a racing driver but was a cop, know all about the back troubles of over 6 foot chaps.
Tell me about it.
Yeah, well, Jeremy, I was just about to say, I'm I'll be surprised if you aren't feeling the odd twinge now and then as well. But we wish Bobby Rahal well in his recovery.
Yeah, we very much do. And yeah, he's you know, such a huge part of this sport these days, Bobby. He's got his finger in all sorts of pies, and he's been wonderful. Oops, that's a bit of an off course excursion there for the
top of the hill turn
number five car. Well, that was Tristan Vautier, I believe, at the wheel of that car.
Correct.
And that was a very scenic route that he took at the top of the hill in turn three.
Yes, and he was on his own, locked up going into turn two, and then, well, he had the opportunity of actually staying on the hard standing through what's is effectively the motorcycle chicane, and he sort of did it, but sort of didn't. And
he covered all his bases, I reckon.
He certainly did, and sort of got a bit of air at one stage as well. So I'm just wondering if he might want to come back in and have that car. They might want to just have a little look at the bottom of the car to see if he's done any damage. And Shea Adam, go on, I'm going to let you say this, Shea, because you've just typed it on our chat, but it is very, very appropriate.
I don't know that I can say it with a straight face. The Mustang sampling was a bit of a bucking bronco.
Very good. Yes, but he held on to the reins. And he's still in the saddle. We'll stop that now, because this could go on for a very, very long, long time. GT Le Mans, we mentioned Conor De Filippi. It's Earl Bamba just going out in the Porsche GT team. RSR in second. Tommy Milner, the best of the Corvettes. 30 minutes down now. So pro drivers available for the non-pro, full pro team. So LMP2 and GTD allowed to go out. And therefore, the restrictions now removed from everybody in this middle part of the sector and session. And remember, the last 15 minutes, it will just be DPI and GT Le Mans. For the moment, we have the opportunity for all 31 cars to go out, and all 31 cars have been out. Team Hardpoint Audi, Rob Ferrial at the moment, the 31st in terms of times. At the moment, they're getting up to speed. Everybody then has been out on the circuit. Hello to Sarah and Martin in Crewe, the home of Bentley Motors in the UK. Sarah, if you don't know, and Martin, both massive fans of Aston Martin, although they are prepared to wave the Union flag for other British marques as well, including their home team Bentley, although none here, of course. But I'm sure they'll be keeping an eye on McLaren's as well, but very much supporting Darren Turner, who is back with the US program at the moment in his capacity as a peripatetic works driver and works ambassador. Shea, what have you got?
Philippe Albuquerque is doing Philippe Albuquerque things. He's gone purple in sectors one and two, and the last time around set the fastest lap. Looks like he's going to improve upon that once more. So that means that Pipo and Felipe Nasr, both sitting up on the pit wall, should be very pleased with their third driver.
Yeah. Purple Minion, I always think of when you say going purple there, or perhaps just holding his breath all the time. As he has gone to the top with a 109.230. That puts him nearly six and a half. In fact, over six and a half tenths to ahead of the field.
Getting down to it now, aren't we?
Yeah, absolutely. Great to hear the sounds of race cars again here at Road Atlanta, Michelin Raceway, Road Atlanta. Into the pits for the number 31, Philippe Albuquerque dives in. And heads to the service. hello to Josh Barrett. And he'll be at Snetterton on Saturday in the UK for the 750 Motor Club meeting. And looking forward to watching the Team USA Scholarship alumni doing their business at the Ford Festival, Formula Ford Festival, next week. And you're not going to be lap charting on the balcony, Jeremy. You're not coming to the UK to be able to support Team USA.
Sadly not. I should be routing from home, however.
Ah, yes. Thanks to the...
I think there's live streaming from the festival next weekend. The boys are excited.
Absolutely. It's going to be very cold, I think. Although possibly quite dry. Although hopefully dry, we've got a bit of a change in the jet stream next week, which should bring us an area of a high pressure to just sort of hover over the Bay of Biscay and off to the left-hand side, the west of England and the United Kingdom. And that might just give us the weather that we are hoping for at this time of the year. Late afternoon at Atlanta, 24 Celsius in the air, 38 on the track. No wind to speak of. Very, very lovely. As we welcome those of you at trackside, Shea Adam is our VP Racing Fuel pit and paddock reporter, and Jeremy Shaw and John Heindorf, the voices in the Hagerty Global Broadcast Centre. About halfway through this session, just a little bit, almost spot on, and it's Cadillac Acura, Mazda Cadillac, Cadillac Acura, Cadillac, for the top eight cars, separated by just on 1 3/4 seconds, but actually pretty equally spaced, yeah. Jeremy, other than the top two, who've got 6/10 between them, and then another 6/10 back to third. But after that, pretty equally spaced and pretty tight.
Yeah, not representative times, I don't think, or perhaps, when I say not representative of the ultimate pace of these cars, but I think this is probably the sort of pace we might see in the race. I think probably, you know, the race is likely to be 11s and 12s when, you know, as an average for a race pace, most of the cars in the 10s, all in 10s except for the top two, Philip Albuquerque and Dane Cameron. But I think different agendas right now, but certainly concentrating on race preparation rather than qualifying trim. So it'll be making sure the car is consistent to drive, making sure it's as good as it can be through the traffic, looking after fuel consumption, of course, and looking after the tyres as well. Tyre degradation was certainly a major factor when we were here at Michelin Raceway last month for the six-hour race. So that's something that all of the teams are very much paying attention to this today and tomorrow, leading into the 10 hours of Petit Le Mans.
Paul Marquardt, hello, Paul. He's tweeted in at IMSA Radio. Good to know that you're tuned in. Dogs are having a bit of a snooze. And he said, have you brought some red clay to put it on the bottom of your shoes to get right into the Petit Le Mans mood? We have all ruined many pairs of footwear and trainers down through the years with the red Georgia clay. I think it's a little drier this weekend, although those camping at the track may have other things to say. But it is particular to this area of Georgia, and it is very difficult to shift, shall we say, particularly if you get it on light-coloured footwear just off the edge of Turn 7, which is where the BMW of Turner Motorsport is at the moment. Absolutely see it there, as through goes the prototype of the Acura Team Penske DPI, heading down towards Turn 10 A and B at the moment for the number 6 car in second place. That's Dane Cameron behind the wheel of that car, under the Fox factory bridge and down to the final corner in front of the brand new Michelin building there at Michelin Raceway Road, Atlanta. And hello to everyone in the sparkling press room there. No, it's difficult for everybody to do their job. Still a little bit of isolation and protocols going on. So thank you in advance to all the media and to the press delegates and PR from the teams. Already been a big help to Shea Adam, and I'm sure we'll be throughout the weekend. Jeremy, that red Georgia clear gets everywhere if you're not careful.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, the thing you learn on your very first visit to Michelin Raceway Road Atlanta, to bring white shoes that you're talking about there. Not a good idea if you want to be using them again at some point in the future, because they're very quickly ruined. If it's dry and dusty, maybe you'll get away with it, but if there's any hint of damp, I'm afraid you're going to be down to your shoe shop the first opportunity after visiting this place. But all joking aside, to Seamus talking about the newcomers, or difference to the original entry list earlier on, there's seven drivers making their debut in the Sports Car Championship this weekend, which is certainly pretty unusual to have that many drivers making their debuts this far into the season. But just run through those seven drivers in the P2. Most of them are in P2. The trio in the Inter-Europol competition car, Jakub Smrykowski, Hodas and McCusker, all making their debuts. Although Rob Hodas and Austin McCusker, of course, have had a goodly amount of experience in the LMP3 Championship, the Prototype Challenge Series, which McCusker won last year, wasn't it? He won the championship last. So making his debut is Jim McGuire, who's another veteran LMP3 driver, mainly in Europe, but also in Europe as well. And then in number 8 car for Tower Motorsport by Starworks, both Mikkel Jensen, Denmark, and very talented young Dutchman, Job van Oetit, making his debut as well. So 5 of the debutants are in LMP2. So making their very first starts in the championship, particularly Kirkwood. I think Shea talks about him already. You know, a talented man, just 21 years of age. He won in everything he's ever driven. In the open wheel championship the last 2 or 3 years, he's swept the board. He's won F4, F3, USF 2000, Indy Pro 2000. Should have taken the move up to Indy Lights, but the Indy Lights was put on hiatus. So he'll be making his turn to the open ranks last year. He's also taken part in 4 now Prototype Challenge races, won 2 of them, set fastest race lap in all 4. So Paul Kirkwood, very much a man to watch, as Shane suggested earlier, will be driving, making his debut in the AIM Vassar Sullivan Lexus team here this weekend. It's really so many new drivers here coming into.
It's Jeremy Shaw. Shea Adam is the other part of our team, our VP at Racing Fuel Pit and Paddock Reporter. New top time in LMP2, or the top time in LMP2, should I say, from Colin Brown, 111.999. Great to hear that Colin will be back in LMP3 next year. Another bit of great news, and there's been quite a lot of good news already about 2021, but John Bennett and Core coming back in LMP3 with Colin Brown. That is going to be a very formidable partnership.
Oh, it's going to be so much fun. I've been waiting for such a long time to find out what John Bennett was going to drive next, because, of course, he never did retire. He just stepped away for a little while, and he made that evidently clear when he did actually retire. But Colin, back whetting his appetite once again. Sort of an interesting and mind-blowing fact about Colin Brown: he's never won Petit Le Mans. So he's here this weekend, driving with his third different LMP2 team in 3 races so far this year, trying to get it done with Performance Tech in their number 38. Good to see him go up to the top of the charts. Not a surprise at all. Colin Brown always fastest in anything he drives. But how about that? Best finish, 2nd in 2014. Colin still looking for his first Petit win, although he's got a Rolex, he's got the Sebring wins, he's got Watkins Glen. He's won everything else, John.
Very interesting chat with John Bennett on Midweek Motorsport on Wednesday evening. And, you know, he was saying, you know, one of the reasons he wants to come back is because he wants to come back. But also he wants to keep Core going. And he made a really good comment, and it's an obvious thing, but he said, when I started the team, he and Morgan Brady, he said, look, you know, we're going to be around for a long time. And if you're going to be around for a long time, 10 or 20 years, then you have to be around for 10 or 20 years. And stopping partway through that is not the way to build the team and keep the team going. Very interested in coming back to the top class of racing. Very nearly won the championship in an LMP2 car, of course, a couple of seasons ago. Took it all the way to the finale, which was Mathieu Petit-Lamont. And in fact, made IMSA, effectively, was part of the reason that IMSA split LMP2 from DPI, because the big manufacturers didn't like the fact that a little privateer team with a Pro-Am driver setup took them so close. And he's a source of much pride to John about that. But the other thing he said, he wanted to keep core going because he believes there's opportunities going forward with the new DPI 2.0, LMDH, or whatever it's called by the time 2023 comes around. He said, we'd love to be back as core in the top flight with our favourite manufacturer. Can't imagine who that might be, as they run the Porsche team for the rest of this season. But smashing to talk to John. If you haven't heard that, it's over on RS1 and the archive, radio-show.co.uk, Series 15, Episode 41, if you look for that. And John was our big interview about halfway through that particular episode. Let's go to Shea for an update on Corvette, who have been all-conquering nearly since we came back to racing on the 4th of July. Shea, what do you have?
It's so good to see the silver Corvette back out and running after a scary crash at the end of the race at the Charlotte Roval. Tommy Milner with a right rear spindle that broke on the car, ultimately resulting in him going into the wall hard and then coming to a stop. But good news, lots of parts replacements needed on that car, but no chassis damage. The crew was actually beginning to work on the car as the race had ended. They took it back to the garage. They went to work in serious anger on Monday, and it was done by the end of Tuesday. So it only took Corvette Racing about a day and a half to get that car completely repaired, back out on track, and right now sitting P3.
Very good. Very good indeed. Very good indeed for them to turn that around. Not too far for them to come, but clearly I would have thought, I presume, Shea, they didn't get a chance to go back to base then. They had to do those repairs on the road.
Correct. They actually were able to get into Road Atlanta, Michelin Raceway Road Atlanta, but they did some of the repairs inside the Charlotte Roval before they had to pack up the car. So they were able to at least strip some of the bits off. But yes, they had to be out of the Charlotte Roval by Sunday for the NASCAR Cup race.
Oh, yeah.
And then moved over here. Very short drive down the road, but a lot easier of a drive than going all the way back up to Michigan.
97.9 FM around Road Atlanta, around the world on RS2, IMSA Radio. This is Mathieu Petit-Lamont. It's Shaw, Shea and Hindorf here. Good to have your company. Mr. Shaw, what's been going on the timing screens?
Good question, but just briefly back to that number four crash. Yes, of course. At Charlotte. That was a scary accident, wasn't it?
And it was.
We thought at the time it was most likely to be some sort of mechanical failure. And indeed on the right rear corner of that car. So it's certainly what it looked like. And I'm sure Tommy Milner will be sort of relieved to know that nothing he did wrong to cause that shunt. Changes in times? Not really. We've still got the same at the front of the field in the DP rank. So it's Philip Albuquerque who set the fastest time. 1:09.230 in number 31 Cadillac. That's the car that won this race 1 year ago. In second place, number six, Acura. It was Dane Cameron who set the time. Simon Pagenaud driving that car now. The third fastest is Ryan Hunter-Reay in the Mazda. It was indeed he who set that time, 1:10.4. Ryan Hunter-Reay, also, of course, a former winner here of this race a couple of years ago, driving for the number 10 team. In LMP2, it is Simon Trummer who is fastest now, 1:11.20. So only less than 0.3 seconds behind the number 85 DPI car. So that's a good run by Simon Trummer. Colin Brown within a couple of tenths of that time in number 38. That is the Performance Tech Motorsports entry. Colin Brown driving for Performance Tech for the first time alongside Matthew Bell and Jim Maguire, both of those two making their debut in the P2 ranks this weekend. In GTLM, it's Conor DeFilippi again, the winner, of course, here 1 month ago in the number 25 BMW Team RLL entry. He is quickest at a 117.2, and that is about 3/4 of a second away from the race lap record that was set last year by Ryan Briscoe. The reason for my question mark there is that the fastest lap here in GTLM 1 month ago was actually a 117.3.
Yes.
Because the conditions weren't quite as good a month ago as they were a year ago. So that 117.2 by Conor DeFilippi now is a little bit quicker than the best time from last month. And in GTD, it's still that time from Robbie Foley, much earlier in the session. 120.0 leads away in the 96 Turner Motorsport BMW. That team really on a roll.
Yeah, they're doing a bit of a Corvette, aren't they? In terms of what they've done since we came back to racing. About 10 minutes before we ask everyone bar the DPIs in the GT Le Mans cars to bug out and leave the track to them. So last 10 minutes for the LMP2s and the GT Daytonas, the GT3 cars. Gabriel Aubry has just left the pits in the JDC Miller Motorsports Cadillac, the number 85. Jim Maguire has just gone out in the number 38, the mighty 38 LMP2 Performance Tech Motorsport car, which Jeremy was speaking a moment or two ago. 911 Porsche in elegant isolation at the moment for Matt Campbell, the Australian superstar. He's heading down towards 10A and 10B, where he's about to catch up with Simon Trummer for the silver, grey and white PR1 Matheson Motorsport Orica, which was going very slowly, but he has sped up before the Porsche caught him. So clearly, maybe a little bit of a qualifying sim. We have got another free practice session. It is effectively the night session this evening at 7:30 Atlanta time. So that is half midnight in the UK, half one European time, and that is a 90-minute session. And qualifying for the IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship is at half midday, 12:30 tomorrow. So that's 5:30 UK. Oh, how smashing is that? Right at the end of the workday. And we have that, of course, wherever you are, whether US or further afield. That's in sound and vision. No blocks, no breaks on the international feed. And that is three qualifying sessions, GTD, GTLM, and then the prototypes together. And then the race on Saturday, when we have a warm-up, unusually. That's at rather early, 9:10 Atlanta time. So that is, what, just after 2 in the UK, just after 3 in Europe. And it is green flag 12:40, so 5:40 in the UK for the 10 hours. And it is the full 10 hours, of course. And to help fill that gap, by the way, between warm-up and the green flag, we'll have Michelin Countdown to Green and also the Porsche GT3 Cup final race. Another triple header for the IMSA Porsche GT3 Cup this weekend. Just a wee bit of housekeeping and one or two sort of parish notices. The announcement that we've been waiting for a wee while, and one or two of us, I think, have been sitting on this because it wasn't our announcement to make, is that MX5 Cup, the Global MX5 Cup, returns to IMSA sanction and therefore to IMSA meetings next year in 2021. Well done to all involved in that. Been some of the best racing we ever see. The little sports cars now enhanced by a sequential gearbox on the latest versions of those cars, and they will be back next year. I know, I do like the healing and towing, and it's a lovely little pedal box on that. But such is the way of the world now, I'm afraid, Jeremy. That's the way it is.
Yeah. Sad, isn't it?
Yeah. So that will be, even though that comes back, that will mean that there are no cars on the IMSA-sanctioned weekend that has a clutch pedal. Or, sorry, that now, I don't know. It might still be a three-pedal car, but it's a sequential box rather than an H-pattern box. I think it is still, in fact, a three-pedal car. So you still have to blip down through the box, as far as I'm aware, because that's the same as Aussie Supercars. They've got sequential, but they've still got three pedals. So maybe they do have three pedals. Mo Murray, help me out.
Don't most of the cars here have three pedals still? They don't use hand clutches, do they?
Well, it's a sort of a semi-automatic, isn't it? Nobody does stand and start, so you don't need a clutch.
Well, out of the pits, they do.
Yeah.
They throw three-pedal cars, aren't they?
Yeah.
But you don't use the pedal, do you?
Not until, only generally speaking, when you're leaving the pits.
I'm trying to remember the GT4 cars that I've driven, the GT3 cars. I'm not sure. I can't remember using a clutch.
Once you get going, no, probably don't.
Right.
Unfortunately, but
yeah. With sequential though, it replaces the. I'm fairly certain it replaces the H pattern box, but I think you still have the heel and toe. Certainly, that's what you do in. The only time I've driven a sequential car, that's what you had to do. It's like a motorcycle box, so it's up and down, but you still have to rev match yourself. And that's what the Aussie supercars still do. The Aussie V8 still do. I will ask. I shall find out. Obviously, that means I have to have a go in the interest of science next year. It means I have to have a go in the new car with the sequential box, doesn't it?
Stand back.
Stand back from the fences at turn two.
Sorry, John.
No, it's all right. No, absolutely.
Couldn't resist, mate.
Lesson learned. Absolutely, lesson learned. Moving
my
on.
Moving on, yes.
Last 18, call it 19 minutes, and Philippe Nasr has gone out in the Wheel and Engineering Cadillac. I think that means all three of their drivers have been out in the 31. Albuquerque, Durrani, and Nasr, is that right? Did Pete sneak out?
Yep, in the middle.
Right, good. Excellent stuff. So they've used this first session extremely effectively. A little bit of early evening sunshine still casting some shadows as the little gaggle of cars head up to turn two at the moment. A couple of prototypes having a wee battle there. LMP2 cars following. That's the Flexbox sponsored Lamborghini. So just a couple of 3 minutes to go before GTD and LMP2 have to pull in. So their last lap or two, and then the last 15 minutes is left to the two pro classes. I do like this, Jeremy. I, something that was brought into IMSA a couple of 3 years ago, this split session in FP2. And whilst I do get a little bit confused about who's meant to be out when, but that's mainly about how it's presented on the timetable, to be honest. But I like the idea that you can put the bronze drivers out first, let them get up to speed before you introduce the other traffic. I do think that works quite well in terms of building confidence for the less experienced drivers.
Yeah, I think you're right. You know, it does, particularly, you know, if they haven't tested that track or driven at the track recently before the race weekend, it does give an opportunity to get out on track and get comfortable, as you say, without having to be looking their mirrors all the time. I do agree. I think it's a system that works very, very well. Just 15 minutes here and there. The same for the prototypes at the end of the session, so they can have some clear track without passing cars on every single lap around here, so that they can begin to dial their cars in, particularly for the qualifying session that will take place tomorrow.
And of course, in those particular categories, the least experienced drivers do have to qualify, which I also think is a cracking idea, if I'm honest.
Love it.
Yeah.
Love it.
gives them an opportunity to go out with new tyres and relatively low fuel load, feel what the car's like. It's a real... Shea was talking about switching on the tyres earlier on, and you hear racing drivers talking about that quite a lot. And it is a real skill, and one, if you're not in the cars a lot, that is very, very difficult. Very difficult to do. Something that I've got to admit that I've never been able to do. I don't drive enough, and I just simply don't have the confidence to go out and use all of the grip that the tyres give you in the first couple or three laps. It is much more of a let's work up to the scary bits kind of thing for me. And all of the drivers in GTD, in particular, that I've talked to, have said that it's really done wonders for the confidence levels in the cars. The unmistakable sound of a flat six Porsche is the 912 Earl Bamber that you can hear in the background. He's just gone through turn six and heads to turn seven with this almost 4.2 litre flat six. That's as big as it can go. I think it's 4.195 litres, 92 cc. And just talking to some people who know about the architecture of that block, the flat six Porsche block, there are 9 millimetres between the cylinder bores. So 3 millimetres in the middle and 3 millimetres either side for the water jackets. So that's it. It cannot go, in terms of cylinders at least, cylinder width diameter, any further. I suppose they could stroke it out a tiny bit, but I'm told that that's about as much as they can get. Still naturally aspirated as well, of course, although a very different sound to the exhaust, which comes out just in front of the rear wheels. They've rerouted the exhausts to come out in front of the rear wheels rather than underneath at the back of the car. They feel there's some performance advantage there, but it does change the sound, which was extraordinary from the earlier version of the 911. Did have a waiver in that form to run without silencer boxes, which were causing them some back pressure issues and stopping the cars from making optimum power back in those, that iteration of the cars, and the other manufacturers were happy to sign off on the waiver and buy into the earplug franchises at the circuit, because it was a very, very sharp note. Like, I remember the first time I heard it, they were testing the car on the airfield at Le Mans on, I think, a Friday afternoon, Shea, when we were in the paddock at Le Mans a few years ago. And we heard, and I honestly thought it was a prototype or something extremely exotic, and couldn't believe it when we got up to a level to see that it was the GT Le Mans car testing the new exhaust system.
Yeah, it certainly didn't sound like it was a GT car. It was very shrill the first time that we heard it. And thankfully, it is a little bit more gentle on the ears, but it's still the kind of sound that the mechanics plug their ears when the car is leaving the pit lane.
Oh, yeah.
And that's not something you often get with race cars.
Yeah, still very distinctive. And still the lovely thing about all the variety that we have in the IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship. A Cadillac DPI certainly doesn't sound like an Acura. And the little 2-litre four-cylinder turbocharged Mazda doesn't sound like either of them. The Porsche is distinctively different from the Corvette. And the BMW has a different note again from the other two cars. And, of course, with BMW, Lamborghini, Acura, Ferrari, Lexus, Aston Martin, and Uncle Tom Cobley and all, as well as Porsche and Mercedes and Audi in... GT Daytona, it is nice to know that when something goes past you You can pretty much tell it from its exhaust, no, Jeremy. All right, the turbocharged cars in GTD now sound a little bit more similar, but there's still, I think, enough of a difference to keep that variety that we love in sports car and endurance racing.
Yeah, I agree. It's fun, isn't it? It's certainly an added bonus, I think, of this IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship. You can, there's so many different exhaust notes out there amongst the four different classes, and really, really cool to see. Good to see also the Ferrari back this weekend for the first time, having skipped the last two races, with Cooper McNeil concentrating on his Ferrari Challenge exploits. Of course, he's wrapped up that championship, surprise, surprise. But back here this weekend, as Shay was saying earlier on, no Tony Wielander. Shame that Tony isn't here, but an able replacement in Alessandro Balzan, joining the regular long-distance driver for that Scuderia Corsa team in Jeff Westfall, the defending champion and looking to repeat as champion in the Michelin Pilot Challenge.
At IMSA Radio, if you need to get in touch with us, 97.9 FM. Thanks again to Dave Miller and the rest of the team, including Tyler Norling and everyone on the IMSA technical side of things, for getting us hooked up to the PA and the FM. Also, our colleagues at Charlotte in NASCAR Productions for making sure we've got the pictures from all around the track so that we can do our job properly, and in particular to our camera operators out there, come rail or hail, yeah, rain or shine, and there's been plenty of that this season on both sides of it. Brilliant work, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you very much indeed for all your hard work so far and all of it to come this weekend. And while we're saying a few thank yous, of course, with my ambassador to the British Motor Racing Motorsports Marshals Club hat on, thank you very much to all of our corner workers, flag marshals, track services and recovery teams, and in particular our very good friends in the IMSA safety trucks, who I know will be listening in on 97.9 FM as they tend to do, and they'll be on Sirius XM I'm sure at the weekend as well. So now we are down to the last few minutes, which means that it's just the pro classes, and an improvement last time around, Jeremy Shaw, for Tristan Nunes in the number 77 Mazda.
Yes, indeed, up to third fastest in car number 77, at 1:09.898. The second master, Harry Ticknell, I don't think did improve actually, did he? But he's in sixth position at 1:10.4. That's Harry Ticknell. Tristan Nunes, though, about that third fastest time, he's just the third car to dip below the 1:10 bracket. Castro Neves also improved a couple of laps ago, 1:10.4 for the number five car, but it's still the time set early, much earlier on by Philip Albuquerque, that leads the way. And that car, the number 31 car, the Wheel and Engineering Cadillac, it's been on pit lane for a little while now.
And Shea, have you been able to find anything out about that?
I've texted Philippe Albuquerque to try and find out, but I'm guessing he's not with this phone with him right now. But yeah, I was giving him some grief from spending so much time out of the Cadillac. Hasn't driven it since, what, January? Back for the 24 hours. Oh, no, I suppose he was in it for the race about a month ago.
Yeah.
But it took him a long time to go back to P1.
Just while we're saying hello to people, particularly to all the...
New fastest.
Oh, yes, GTM. Go ahead. Yeah, go ahead, Jeremy. Just saw that come up as well.
Yeah, Bruno's... Was it? Yeah. No, I beg your pardon.
He's just gone back out again. He's just gone back out again, Jeremy. Out that's why it flashed up for you. Yes, I saw that as well and thought exactly the same. 1:17.281 for Spengler. Who's just That car's just gone back out again for Rahal Letterman-Lanigan, BMW team, the M8 GTE. It's the number 25 car back out on the circuit. John Edwards is already out in the sister car. It is BMW, Porsche, Corvette, Corvette, BMW, Porsche. So, interesting run of manufacturers there. Hello to all the press. Small but happy band in the Michelin Tower, just off turn 10. Particularly hello to Ryan Merritt from Sportscar 365, who is covering this weekend.
DPI.
Go ahead, sorry, Jeremy.
Yeah, a whole bunch of improvements here all in DPI. Tristan Nuno's just gone second fastest in number 77 Mazda, won 9.8, fractionally ahead of the number 6 car. Simon Pagenaud driving that car at the moment. It was Dane Cameron that set the time in number 6 a while ago. Ryan Briscoe also has improved moments ago and won 9.983. Elio Castroneves won 10.042, and Harry Ticknell won 10.187. So those 5 cars all improving and all within 0.3 of a second of each other, but still a half a second or more behind Philip Albuquerque, set much earlier on. Now with 5.5 minutes remaining, number 31 car is back out on the racetrack with Felipe Nasr at the wheel.
Now, I know my ears, like the rest of me, are getting older, but I detect a slightly different note from the Mazda, or at least a note that I've not noticed before. On overrun, so when off throttle, there's a real crackly note to that, and it reminds me very much of the Ford GT and the very clever air-based system that they use to keep the turbo spinning up. And, of course, it was Multimatic that ran the Fords. And I wonder if they have just been tweaking that little four-cylinder, two-litre engine with a bit of clever engineering on the wastegate, the air-driven wastegate and boost on that turbocharger. Because it just has a very similar sound to the Ford. Much higher revving engine, but there's definitely something there. So that's a question that we need to have answered to see if I've just noticed it for the first time or whether this is something that they've been working on. If you're trackside, listening on 97.9, have a listen as the 77 car going through turn one at the moment heads up to the top of the hill. Have a little
Can
listen.
Can you turn up my ambient sound a bit then, please? Because I can't hear it.
I can, Jeremy. There we go. So, it was... I just caught it in the background. And I'm pretty certain it was that car. So we'll see if we can get a wee bit of intel on that. There you go. It's almost as if it's running over a curb, but it wasn't. It was turning into turn six at the time. Just something you pick up when you listen to cars in headphones all the time. I mean, every day, that's what I do. Every day, I walk around listening to race car engines in my headphones. That's 55's the same. Going into turn six in particular.
BMW 1-2 now in GTLM. Spengler at a 1:17.281. Teammate John Edwards, 1 minute 17.349. So rather disappointing, actually. There's 0.068 between two of those two. And we've now got all six cars in GTLM separated by 2.272 of a second. Yeah, that's a massive amount, isn't it? Better last.
Huge. Immense.
Brilliant.
So both of the Mazdas out now, and Harry Ticknell, who has driven both the Ford and, of course, the Mazda. So possibly a good person to ask, is that an air-driven system on the turbo overrun?
Ryan Briscoe back up to second position, yes. Number 10. Cadillac, championship leader, 1:09.860. So still 0.6 and more ahead, behind number 31 car, and just very, very tight from second place all the way down to seventh.
Yeah, Antonio Garcia has just made a bit of a mess of that. Jeremy, with Corvette now at GT. All of a sudden, the GT Le Mans cars have come out to play. Last couple of minutes.
Haven't they just? And again, super, super tight. Still at the front. Is now the margin now is 0.057, but this time it's from Antonio Garcia to John Edwards.
Hello to El Perry in the northwest, in a motel room there, working this week. El, not sure where you are. Hope all is good, but thanks for tuning in to IMSA Radio. Mazda still continues. The sole red crystal car just dropping down through the S's now. And is that into the pits there for Garcia, or is that another new fastest lap? No, it's another new fastest lap. Yeah. First of the GT Le Mans cars into the 16s, Jeremy. That's seriously impressive.
Yeah, we're still actually 3/4 of a second away from the pole time that was set last month by Nick Tandy. He turned a 1:16.1, actually. Nick Tandy did to win the pole position last month for the 6 hours. The qualifying lap record set by the absent now Ferrari of James Calado last year, 1:15.6.
Hello to Dan Fly, who's at the track, listening on 97.9 FM. He said, ears. He said, I noticed the same thing on the 55 and the 77 at Turn 6 and Turn 7 in particular this morning in FP1. Almost sounds like they're losing a cylinder when off throttle. Clearly they aren't. But being a Ford GT fan, you mentioning that has really clicked that off in my mind as well. Looking forward to seeing if you can get an explanation later on in the weekend. What I need to know is if I just haven't noticed that before, or if that's new for this weekend. Garcia takes the checkered flag. And does he improve again? Yes, he does. 16.901. So just shaving another couple of fractions off. Felipe Nasr goes through with a 9.366. So very close to that car's best time of a 9.230. Briscoe, Pagano, Rossi all going through. And we have an imposter on the flag stand. I didn't recognise our flag marshal on the start-finish line. That was neither Tani or Dennis there. So that's another mystery we've got to find out. If you know, I'd expect your attainment. Well, that was a pretty decent session. All 31 cars out. Earlier on, GTD was topped by Turner Motorsport in a 120 flat. LMP2, PR1 Matheson Motorsport in 111.2. And the pro cars right at the end there. GT Le Mans, Corvette BMW, BMW, Porsche Corvette. And where's the other Porsche? Oh, Porsche GT team. There you go. Came into the pit lane. Matty Campbell. There we go. And they were separated by 7 tenths of a second, all of those six. And as far as DPI is concerned, it was Cadillac Mazda, Cadillac Acura, Acura Mazda, Cadillac Cadillac. And that whole field separated by a second. So, Jeremy, early days, I know, and perhaps not everybody showing exactly how much speed they have got, but I think that's a pretty good session for everybody. We didn't see too many issues, certainly nobody going off the track and hitting anything, which at this time of the week is always a good thing.
Yes, indeed. I mean everybody turned a goodly amount of laps, everybody over I think at least 30 or 29 I guess for Ryan Briscoe car, but everybody else between 30 and 40 laps, other than the number 12 Lexus. I only completed 11 laps during that session, so that's the one outlier. We'll try and find out what happened to that car when we come back again for night practice.
One of my favourite sessions of the week. Thanks to Shea Adam, our VP Racing Fuel Pit Lane Reporter. Anything for you to add from the pit of the paddock before we hand back to our colleagues in the PA room in the Michelin Tower?
I've got a lot of text messages to send to try and find some answers.
Excellent. That's what we like to hear. Plenty still to come, including qualifying for the Michelin Pilot Challenge here on IMSA Radio. But from Jeremy Shaw and me, John Hindhoff, in the Haggerty Global Broadcast Centre for IMSA Radio, and Shea Adam, our VP Racing Fuel Pit and Paddock Reporter, thanks for joining us on RS2. If you're away from the track, stay tuned. We've got plenty of IMSA content to come before our next live track session. For those of you listening at Road Atlanta on 97.9 FM, it's back to our colleagues in the PA booth, which may be Ed Conway. And if it is, Ed, Nice to hear your voice again.
This programme is a Radio Show Limited production.
Tell your friends there's more at RadioLeMans.com.